brain. The stimulants. The stimulants are the ADHD medications you're most likely to have heard of. They've been around longest and are used for both kids and adults. If you were diagnosed as a child, a stimulant might have been recommended as part of your treatment years ago. Stimulants are also the most controversial medications for ADHD. Myths, as well as realistic concerns, appear regularly in the news and fly about the internet pretty constantly. This chapter will sort fact from fiction. Give you an idea of whether a stimulant might help you. Answer the questions typically raised about these medications by adults with ADHD. The stimulants, pros and cons. The pros. The stimulants increase inhibition, resistance to distraction, and the capacity to sustain attention while holding in mind what you are supposed to be doing or planning to do. They increase motor timing and coordination, as well as emotional self-control. As a result, they reduce the adverse impact these and other ADHD symptoms have on various domains of our major life activities. With the new sustained-release forms of these medicines, these positive benefits can last for 8 to 12 hours, instead of the typical 3 to 5 with immediate-release forms. The cons. Some people experience problems with insomnia, loss of appetite, stomach aches, and headaches with these medications. Others feel somewhat tense, as if they had too much caffeine, for instance. A small percentage of cases report increased anxiety, tics, or other nervous mannerisms, especially if these were pre-existing problems before starting medications. The medicines cannot be taken 24 hours a day, so they can leave some times of the day uncovered or with too little medication for it to be effective, such as late evening hours, if the medicine was taken in the morning. How do stimulants help? Two basic types of stimulants are currently marketed in the United States. Methylphenidate, MPH, and amphetamine, AMP. Generic name. Methylphenidate. Brand name, Ritalin. Generic name, amphetamine. Brand name, Dexedrine. Generic name. Methylphenidate. Brand name, Focalin. Generic name, amphetamine. Brand name, Dextrostat. Generic name, methylphenidate. Brand name, Methylin. Generic name, amphetamine. Brand name, Adderall. Generic name, methylphenidate. Brand name, Metadate. Generic name, amphetamine. Brand name, Vyvanse. Generic name, methylphenidate. Brand name, Concerta. Generic name, amphetamine. Note, a third stimulant, Premalene, brand name Silert, was available for nearly 30 years, but was discontinued due to rare but significant risks for liver damage. The stimulants help ease ADHD symptoms by correcting shortages of neurochemicals that carry self-control boosting messages in the brain. To be available as messengers, the neurochemicals have to be available in the spaces between nerve cells. Think of them as the water in a system of canals. The amphetamines mainly pump up the amount of dopamine and, to a lesser extent, norepinephrine, produced and expressed by the nerve cells, so that more ends up in those spaces. Their effect in the brain is like opening a gate to let the water rush into the lock. Methylphenidate mainly decreases the amount of dopamine that is absorbed back into the nerve cell after being released. It keeps the lock closed so that the water, neurochemical level, remains high. Why wouldn't an ADHD medicine like the stimulants make me even more antsy than I already am? The term stimulant is misleading. Stimulant medications like MPH, Ritalin, etc., do make people without ADHD more alert and awake. They stimulate activity in the frontal regions of the brain. The reason they don't make hyperactive kids and adults even more restless than they already are, due to ADHD, is that these parts of the brain are underactive in those with ADHD. There's not enough norepinephrine and dopamine available to send signals between neurons and stimulate the mind to do what it's supposed to do. Pay attention, sit still, look before leaping, and so forth. While stimulants can also stimulate the mind to do what it's supposed to do in normal adults, the degree of improvement is far less dramatic in those with ADHD. This is most likely due to the marked underfunctioning in the ADHD brain that is not evident in a normal one. Why are the stimulants frequently abused? In those who have typical levels of dopamine in the brain, the boost afforded by the stimulants provides a pleasant sensation of speediness. But that's not all. The stimulants increase dopamine in the regions of the brain known to increase the likelihood of drug addiction. Some of the same regions, the prefrontal cortex and cerebellum, where the drugs do so much good for people with ADHD. Some of these regions serve as the reward centers of the brain, determining how pleasurable or reinforcing certain stimuli or experiences will be. Increasing activity in these centers can result in increased sensations of euphoria, interest, or other reward-related experiences. These pleasurable altered states of consciousness are most likely to occur when stimulants are taken intravenously or snorted into the sinus passages as a powder, allowing the drug to enter into and then clear from these brain regions rapidly. It is this rapid alteration in conscious sensations that creates the euphoria or other pleasurable sensations. Why don't adults or children with ADHD get hooked on the stimulants? Mainly because the drugs are taken orally, in pill or capsule form, and thus enter and leave the brain very slowly. Most people who abuse stimulants snort them or inject them into a vein in a solution, such as the stimulant mixed with water. By those delivery systems, the drugs hit the brain all at once, with a much more powerful wallop. Also, when these medications are used to treat ADHD, they are only bringing the dopamine levels up to normal, not raising them rapidly, well above normal levels, as they would in someone attempting to abuse the drugs through intranasal or intravenous use. Are the stimulants safe? Obviously, the stimulants can be abused by anyone. That's why they're classified as Schedule II controlled substances. That classification puts strict limits on the amounts of these drugs that manufacturers can produce every year, on how they can be prescribed, and on how pharmacies store and dispense them. It also means if you decide to try them, you need to take responsibility for keeping them locked up in a safe place where no one but you can get them. But what about the potential danger to you? You may have heard a couple of different myths about the stimulants. It's time to set the story straight. Do the stimulants lead to abuse of other drugs? You may have heard claims that these drugs increase the sensitivity to or risk for abusing other drugs, especially other stimulants. The vast majority of research does not support this claim. More than 16 studies have examined this issue, many, like my own, having followed children with ADHD treated with stimulants for months or years into adulthood. They did not find any increase in risk for later drug abuse in these cases. Evidence for claims that these drugs can sensitize the brain, making later exposure to stimulants more powerful and potentially addicting, comes only from studies of animals in which the drugs were given intravenously, injected directly into the brain, or given in much higher doses than is the case when treating children or adults with ADHD. So the evidence to date does not support any claims that using stimulants as prescribed for managing ADHD contributes to the risk of abusing these or other drugs now or later in life. Do the stimulants cause heart attacks or strokes? You may have heard that these drugs can increase the risk of sudden death, usually from heart block, and that people taking stimulants have, although even more rarely, suffered strokes. Sudden deaths that occur when the heart stops beating have all been traced to other factors, like a history of structural heart defects, along with vigorous exercise right before the death. These factors alone can account for sudden death. The available evidence actually shows that people on stimulants have a somewhat lower likelihood of sudden death than the general population. This is probably because physicians routinely screen for heart problems before prescribing stimulants, and don't use them for anyone with a family history of sudden death or a personal history of structural heart abnormalities, major arrhythmias, other major cardiac problems, or even high blood pressure. This means that those at greatest cardiac risk with stimulants usually don't end up with this prescription. This could be why the risk ends up lower than in the general population. Research shows that sudden death occurs in 1 to 3 of 100,000 people taking stimulants for ADHD every year, versus 1 to 7 out of every 100,000 in the general population. So the rate of sudden death in those taking stimulants is no higher than that for the general population that is not taking stimulants. It was even somewhat lower in some research. That's because people about to take a stimulant prescription get a physical exam and screen for possible cardiac problems. When cardiac problems are detected, they are typically not prescribed stimulants. This is not the case for the general population that is not being routinely screened for heart problems. How long can I continue to take a stimulant without any long-term negative effects? As far as we know, you can take it for as many years as you may need to manage your symptoms and reduce related impairments. Is there any scientific evidence to suggest that Ritalin or other stimulant medication is either safe or unsafe during pregnancy? There is no evidence concerning the effects of any ADHD medications on pregnant mothers or their babies. So at this time, all companies recommend that women discontinue their ADHD medications should they become pregnant. What side effects can I expect? These are the most common side effects adults experience when taking a stimulant. They are listed from most to least common. Insomnia. Loss of appetite. Weight loss. Headaches. Nausea, upset stomach or stomach ache. Anxiety. Irritability. Motor tics. Increased muscle tension. You can find a simple list like this in the package insert that comes with your prescription. That doesn't tell you much about the impact you can really expect the stimulants to have on your daily life. These first-hand reports illustrate both what you might experience and how to counteract any negative effects. I had never been treated for my ADHD before, always believing that the symptoms were really just a reflection of my own personal failings or lack of self-discipline. But when my doctor started me on a stimulant for my ADHD, the results amazed me. I actually could remember multiple things in my mind that I needed to do without losing them to the nearest distractions. And I was able to persist at work I usually found boring far longer than before, which meant I was much more productive at getting things done, done more quickly and more efficiently, because I could focus better on the tasks at hand. I know it sounds weird, but I could actually see things more clearly, not so much things around me, but the ideas I was holding in my mind about what I wanted to do were more clear, less jumbled and disorganized, and more likely to lead me to get them done. I did have less of an appetite, particularly for midday meals, but I had been meaning to drop a few pounds anyway, so that was no big deal. And I did find myself staying up a little later at night before falling asleep, but not so much that it affected me the next day. Overall, being treated for my ADHD has literally saved my job and my marriage. At times, I still need some help with structuring my work late in the day, especially when the medicine may be wearing off. But on balance, this treatment has helped me turn my life around. I took Ritalin in second and third grade, and it made me really jittery and nervous. I didn't want to go to school for a long time. I felt a little calmer once the doctor took me off it. But then I didn't want to go to school because I couldn't sit still and concentrate. I still have anxiety today, so I wasn't too eager to take the Adderall my doctor suggested recently. But she prescribed an anti-anxiety drug along with the Adderall, and they worked great for me. The research is somewhat mixed on whether stimulants worsen anxiety, but enough studies have found this to be the case, though more with children than adults, that you should be aware of this possible adverse effect. If you are concerned about anxiety, the non-stimulants might be a better choice. Yeah, sometimes I have a really hard time falling asleep at night. But I drink warm milk, and a friend taught me deep breathing and progressive relaxation, and that often helps. On an up note, I've lost that 10 pounds I could never shed. These days, I never seem to want lunch. Maybe because the stimulant is at its peak in my system then, and I think I'm just eating the right number of calories now. When my brother started taking a stimulant, he said all of a sudden he was snapping at people and losing his temper all the time. His doctor reduced the dosage, and he felt better, although he didn't get the same amount of help with his ADHD symptoms that way. But when I took the same medicine, I felt pretty calm, like I could control my emotions for the first time in I don't know how long. In rare cases, stimulants make people more irritable or angry. Whether stimulants are likely to make you feel this way may depend on your own personality, what other disorders you may have along with your ADHD, and which of your executive functions have been affected most by ADHD. If you had a lot of trouble controlling your emotions in the past, and you haven't been diagnosed with a problem like depression in addition to ADHD, the stimulants may actually improve your emotional self-control. Emotion regulation is one of the executive functions weakened by ADHD and improved by medication treatment. When they first started working, these medications made me feel like my whole body was tense, like I might be clenching my jaw and grinding my teeth, and I was always on the verge of a headache. Sometimes my back felt really tight, too. It was like I'd had 4 cups of coffee instead of my usual 1 or 2. Now I go to the gym and work out, which makes me at least feel more relaxed before I get home from work. My wife says I've not only trimmed down, but bulked up my muscles, too. Actual increases in muscle tension are not common side effects of stimulant treatment, but some people do experience them, especially if they are taking higher than typical doses. Unless you have a family history of tic disorders, the stimulants are unlikely to cause motor tics. If you have a family history, you might develop them while on stimulants. Up to a third of those who already have tics will see them worsen. This medicine really helps my ADHD symptoms, but it makes me really nauseous. What can I do? This can happen if you take the medicine on an empty stomach, so try eating something before you take your medication. If it continues, speak with your doctor about reducing the dose, changing the time you take the dose, or switching to another medication. Can I drink alcohol or take other drugs when I am on a stimulant for ADHD management? Yes, but do so in moderation. The only drugs you should avoid, of course, are other stimulants, such as cocaine, methamphetamine, crack, or another prescription stimulant, as this just increases the effect of the other stimulant on your body. But caffeine and alcohol do not interact adversely with the stimulants. Nicotine can act as a stimulant, compounding the effects of your ADHD medicines on your heart rate and blood pressure. Please discuss this with your doctor if you are a smoker. What are my choices? Pills. These are the original versions of these medicines, and they've been available for many decades. The first versions of AMP were developed in the 1930s, while the first version of MPH was created in the 1950s. In pill form, these medications are absorbed quickly, usually within 15 to 20 minutes after being taken by mouth and swallowed. They can usually reach their peak level in the blood, and so in the brain, in 60 to 90 minutes, and may control the symptoms of ADHD for 3 to 5 hours. That's their main problem. If you want to control the symptoms of ADHD for the typical 14 to 16-hour adult day, You have to take these medications 2 to 4 times a day, or even more often. The pump. Then came the invention of an ingenious water pump system for delivering these drugs into the body and keeping them in the bloodstream longer. The brand name for this system is Concerta, and it delivers MPH. It's a container that looks like a capsule, with a small laser-drilled hole on one of its long ends. Inside are 2 chambers. One chamber contains a paste-like sludge of MPH, and the other chamber is empty. There's also a powdered form of MPH that coats the outside of the capsule. Now, here's the neat part. When you swallow the capsule, the powder goes right to work just as it would in the pill form. That gives the capsule just enough time to start to absorb water from your stomach and later your intestines. The water is absorbed through the wall of the pump in a continuous, even flow into that empty chamber. As that chamber fills up, it presses against the chamber containing the MPH paste and squeezes it out the hole in the capsule continuously for 8 to 12 hours or more. The end result is that many people, especially children, need to take only 1 capsule a day, and not the usual 2 to 3 or more they would have to take using the regular pills. The capsules come in various doses, of course, so your doctor can adjust the dose to suit your individual needs and responses. One problem, though, is that some adults in particular may need a longer course of medication each day than what the capsule provides. To deal with that issue, some physicians prescribe the immediate-release pill form of MPH or AMP toward the end of the day, to provide an extra 3 to 5 hours of treatment with medication when the Concerta may be losing its beneficial control of ADHD symptoms. Even so, you just have to love the human ingenuity that led to the discovery of this delivery system. The pellets. At around the same time as the water pump method was being invented, engineers were modifying a method that uses time-release pellets to keep medicines in the body and bloodstream longer than the pills. This method had been used for years with some cold medicines, but had to be modified in various ways for use with MPH and AMP. Now we have time-release pellets for both of these stimulants. Little beads of the drug are coated in such a way that some dissolve immediately after being swallowed, while others dissolve 1, 2, 3 or more hours later, so that the drug can be absorbed more gradually into the bloodstream across 8 to 12 hours for most people. This ingenious delivery system has the added advantage that anyone who simply cannot or does not want to swallow the capsule containing these pellets can open the capsule, pull it apart, sprinkle the contents on a teaspoon of applesauce, yogurt, or other food, and swallow it that way. It does not change the way the drug will work in the body. Again, there are different sizes, doses, of these capsules to permit your physician to adjust the dose to its optimum level for you. Like the water pump method, these time-release pellet systems sometimes have to be supplemented late in the day with a regular or immediate-release pill version of the same drug if you need longer symptom control than what these systems can provide into the evening hours. Some research shows that this pellet system provides a little better control of ADHD symptoms in the morning than afternoon hours, while the pump system provides a bit better control in the afternoon than morning hours. The patch. The next invention of a delivery system for the stimulants was approved by the FDA in 2007. It is a patch with an adhesive coating that is applied directly to the skin, such as on the back of your shoulder or on the buttocks. The patch, which goes by the brand name Daytrana, contains MPH. When applied this way, the MPH is absorbed through the skin and gets into the bloodstream by that means. So long as you wear the patch, MPH is being delivered to your bloodstream for as many hours during the day as you want. As with the other drug forms, the patch comes in different doses, so you can take the amount that's best for you. The prodrug. In 2008, another delivery system received FDA approval for use by adults with ADHD, and that system goes by the brand name of Vyvanse, NAMP. Here is yet another example of human inventiveness. One of the problems with the immediate release pills, as well as the pellet systems, is that they have the potential to be abused, usually by crushing and inhaling the powder from the pills or the beads from the pellet systems, or by mixing the powder with water and injecting it into a vein. This problem led a small biotech company near Albany, New York, to invent a method in which the amphetamine cannot be activated unless it is in the human stomach or intestines. They achieved this by bonding a lysine compound to the dextroamphetamine, DAMP. This bonding of an active drug to another compound that alters its typical pattern of activation creates a type of medication called a prodrug by the FDA. Once the prodrug is swallowed, a chemical that occurs naturally in the stomach and intestines, and probably the blood, splits the lysine from the DAMP, allowing the DAMP to go to work. Typically, the effects of the DAMP last 10 to 14 hours. Can the generics really be as different as they seemed in my case? The pharmacy I go to switched to generic versions of Ritalin, and the new generic did not work nearly as well. My doctor switched me to the brand name drug, but do I really need to spend the extra money? Your doctor was correct to believe there can be a significant difference. The generic medications appear not to be manufactured with the same degree of rigor as the brand name medications. The generics have been associated with numerous reports of greater variability in controlling symptoms on a day-to-day basis, and less success overall in managing symptoms. Should that occur, has to be transferred back to the brand name medicine. Should I change medication every time a new drug comes out, even though my current medication seems to work fine? If I don't try the new medications, whose advertising promises great new benefits, will I be missing out? Generally, it's not a good idea to chase the latest drug if the one you are taking is successfully managing your ADHD symptoms. However, if side effects are annoying, and your doctor believes the newer medication may be less likely to cause problems, it may be worth switching drugs or delivery systems. For instance, some adults report that Adderall XR's faster and more subjectively detectable onset of action may be associated with feelings of increased inner tension. Switching to Vyvanse has helped them with a smoother onset and offset of their medication's effects. Both are amphetamines, yet the delivery system for Vyvanse seems to make a difference in how rapidly the dose is felt. What do I do if I forget to take my medicine? As long as it's not past 1 or 2 p.m., you can probably take the drug without much impact on your sleep. If you have forgotten for the day, just take it the next day. There appear to be no problems with abrupt cessation of the stimulants, most likely because they wash out of your body within 24 hours in most cases when taken as prescribed. Is it possible to build tolerance to stimulant medicines? If so, how do I avoid this? Or how do I handle it once I'm experiencing it? Actual physical tolerance seems unlikely with the current ADHD medications. But some individuals report that their medication seems less effective about 3 to 6 months after starting their treatment. This usually requires adjusting the dose or, sometimes, changing to a different delivery system or medication. Clinically, we sometimes see people complaining that their medicine isn't working as well as before. But further information shows them going through an unusually stressful or demanding period in their life that may exacerbate their ADHD symptoms and make it more difficult for their usual dose to provide adequate treatment. They may need to temporarily change their dose or address the source of the stress at these times. Some people adjust their view of themselves once on medication and end up focusing so strongly on where they haven't experienced improvement that they start to believe the drug isn't working. They may need to stop the medicine for a few days to remind themselves of the positive effects it has had on them, or to discover whether, in fact, the drug is not doing anything for them. 14. The non-stimulants. When doctors and researchers talk about the non-stimulants for ADHD, they are typically talking about atomoxetine. You'll find this medication sold under the brand name Strattera. However, in September 2009, the FDA approved the use of an extended-release form of guanfacine, brand name Intuniv, previously used to treat high blood pressure, as a treatment for ADHD in children. This is another non-stimulant that may enter the picture more fully, though it's not clear when such approval will be given for adult use of this medication. For that reason, we won't discuss this drug here. The FDA approved atomoxetine for the management of child, teen, and adult ADHD in 2003. It was the first, and still the only, non-stimulant approved for the treatment of ADHD in adults. At that time, it was the first new drug approved for ADHD in more than 25 years. Atomoxetine was studied more than any other ADHD drug before receiving FDA approval, with randomized double-blind studies involving more than 6,000 patients worldwide. Although the stimulants have been used for ADHD much longer, there's no doubt that the safety and efficacy of atomoxetine have been well researched. Atomoxetine, Strattera. Interestingly, atomoxetine, brand name Strattera, was explored for years as a possible antidepressant. When its manufacturer abandoned that direction, for reasons unknown to us, the company shelved the drug, but much later began to look at it as a treatment for ADHD. The drug prevents norepinephrine from being reabsorbed by the nerve cells once released, thus leaving more of the drug outside the cell to act on other nearby nerve cells. This makes it a natural for treating a disorder marked by a shortage of that chemical messenger. In Chapter 13, you heard that the stimulants target mainly dopamine. The fact that atomoxetine targets primarily norepinephrine means that it has a slightly different effect on ADHD symptoms, so it may work better than the stimulants for some people. It all depends on where your particular ADHD neurological deficits lie. We're all biologically unique, especially in the organization and functioning of the brain. How effective is atomoxetine compared to stimulants? On average, about 75% of people get positive effects from the stimulants or the non-stimulants. Some studies suggest that while 50% of people respond positively to both types of medications, 25% may respond better to a stimulant than to atomoxetine, while the remaining 25% may respond better to atomoxetine than to one of the stimulants. Why atomoxetine is rarely abused, and what this means to you. Some research shows that by blocking the reuptake of norepinephrine, atomoxetine also increases the amount of dopamine outside of nerve cells. But it does so only in certain parts of the brain, such as the frontal cortex. This means the drug can address dopamine-related ADHD deficits in the brain without affecting the brain reward centers, likely to be related to drug addiction or abuse. Because it doesn't have the same stimulant effect as methylphenidate and amphetamine, the drug has little appeal as a drug of abuse. In fact, research shows that the drug is no more favored by known drug addicts than other psychiatric drugs, like antidepressants, which is to say, very little. This is why it's called a non-stimulant, and why it's not a controlled substance in the United States. What does this mean to you? It's much more convenient to fill and refill a prescription. Your doctor can phone in a refill, for example, which can't be done with the stimulants. You don't have to take the same precautions to keep the drug inaccessible to everyone else. This might be the treatment of choice for you if you struggled with substance abuse of your own. In fact, one study of adult alcoholics with ADHD showed that atomoxetine improved ADHD and reduced heavy drinking at the same time. Atomoxetine can be taken once or twice a day, depending on the dosage. Most adults take the drug once a day. Its effects last most of the day, so there is no need for an extended release form to get such daily coverage as there is with the stimulants. Most people start by taking the drug in the morning, but if they experience significant drowsiness or tiredness, that lasts longer than a few weeks. It may be best to take it at night, or to split the dose, and take it twice daily. It might take longer for your doctor to arrive at the right dosage for you than it does with the stimulants, however. Your body will take longer to adjust to the side effects of drugs like atomoxetine than to the stimulants. So your doctor will probably want to leave you on a particular dose a bit longer before adjusting it than would be the case with a stimulant. I heard that this drug takes longer to work than the stimulants. Is that so? If so, how long? Yes. With atomoxetine, it can take 2 to 4 weeks of gradual dose adjustment before your doctor finds the best level for you. The dose is adjusted more slowly, mainly because taking a norepinephrine drug like this one can result in annoying side effects, like nausea and drowsiness, if the doses are raised too much or too quickly. I recommend that adults just starting this drug be patient. You've been dealing with ADHD for years, so a few weeks to achieve good control of your symptoms is a small price to pay for the advantages this drug can provide. Is atomoxetine safe? It's certainly safe in terms of its abuse potential. Liver complications occur once in every million people treated. 1 to 4 cases out of 4.5 million treated to date. It was not clear that the drug caused the problem in all 4 cases. This extremely unusual side effect seems to result from a very rare autoimmune reaction to the drug, in which the body's immune system attacks and inflames the outer layers of the liver. To be safe, people with a history of liver damage or other liver problems may want to avoid using this drug. The package insert for atomoxetine warns of a possible increase in suicidal thinking from this drug, though not suicide attempts. It's important to note that this risk was not found for teens or adults. Even for children, it remains questionable, because the methods by which the information was collected in the initial clinical trials weren't entirely sound. Atomoxetine can also increase your heart rate and blood pressure, though even less so than the stimulants. The most common side effects of atomoxetine are nausea or vomiting, dry mouth, dizziness or lightheadedness, drowsiness, constipation, sweating, decreased libido, sex drive, or erectile dysfunction, insomnia, far less common than with the stimulants, irritability, rare, same as with the stimulants. Some people actually report improvement in their mood or emotional self-control while on this medication. I couldn't handle the insomnia caused by the first stimulant I tried. My doctor tried me on other stimulants, and I had the same problems. But I'm not getting nearly as much improvement in my ADHD from Strattera. What else can I do? This is a very unlikely situation, but can certainly occur. Try some of the non-medication options in steps 4 and 5, as well as ADHD coaching, to see if any of these help. Atomoxetine might be a better choice than stimulants if you have mild to moderate ADHD and don't need the most potent drugs, like AMP. You've tried stimulants without much improvement in your symptoms. You found stimulant side effects, notably insomnia, intolerable. Atomoxetine doesn't cause sleep problems. You or someone in your household has a history of substance abuse. You need the therapeutic effects all day long. You suffer from anxiety, depression, tics, nervous mannerisms, or obsessions and compulsions. Atomoxetine doesn't worsen these problems. In some cases, tics or anxiety might actually improve. The bottom line? Some studies suggest that atomoxetine may not produce quite as much improvement in ADHD symptoms as the stimulants. But you might find you get enough improvement to manage your symptoms and, at the same time, avoid uncomfortable side effects that can be associated with stimulants. Can I open the capsule to mix it with food or adjust my dose? No. Atomoxetine has some acid-like properties that can burn the eye if you get some of the medicine powder, on your fingers and happen to rub your eyes. To adjust your dose, your doctor can combine various sizes of the capsules to better treat your ADHD. Bupropion, Wellbutrin. Bupropion, brand name Wellbutrin, is a drug developed as an antidepressant that is sometimes used to treat adults with ADHD, particularly if they have associated anxiety or depression. It's not FDA approved for this use and hasn't been studied as thoroughly as atomoxetine for treating ADHD. This does not prevent doctors from prescribing it, however, in cases where the medication might prove a better choice than either the stimulants or atomoxetine. Generally, when you have been diagnosed with anxiety or depression in addition to ADHD. Bupropion increases norepinephrine in the brain in the same way as atomoxetine, but it affects other brain chemicals too, which means it may produce unwanted side effects. If your only diagnosis is ADHD, you may be better off with either a stimulant or atomoxetine. Other non-stimulants may be prescribed for you, but not necessarily for ADHD, since none are particularly effective in improving ADHD symptoms. However, ADHD medications are often combined with drugs used to treat other conditions, such as antidepressants, anti-anxiety drugs, antihypertensive drugs, and even some mood stabilizer or antipsychotic drugs. The anti-arcoleptic drug modafinil, brand name Provigil, has shown some initial promise as a treatment for ADHD symptoms in children. But even these results have not always been replicated in other studies. There is also no research to date on use of the drug for adults with ADHD. The drug increases wakefulness and arousal, and sometimes has been used to treat sleep apnea, disrupted breathing while asleep. But it has not received FDA approval for treatment of ADHD as of this writing. The FDA has required that it be studied further for certain rare side effects before receiving approval. Stay tuned for news on this medication. 15. What to expect from treatment? Medications for ADHD are among the safest, most effective, and best studied of all drugs used to treat psychiatric conditions. You have a very good chance, up to 80%, of zeroing in on a course of treatment that will turn your life around. It might take a little time. Some experimentation and consultation with your doctor may be needed to arrive at the best regimen for you. Here's how you and your doctor will get there. A physical exam and interview. You may have already covered these steps during your diagnostic evaluation, but if you were diagnosed a while back and are just considering medication now, your doctor will probably want to cover this ground again. It's wise to make sure no new factors that could affect a course of medication have entered the picture. Your physician will conduct a physical examination with particular attention to your heart rate, your blood pressure, other medications you are taking. Rule out heart problems. If you listen to chapters 13 and 14, you know it's important to identify any heart problems, either in yourself or in your family history, before deciding on a stimulant, and probably even a non-stimulant. Some physicians may want to do an electrocardiogram, EKG. While not usually necessary, it's a fairly inexpensive precaution, and not a bad idea if you haven't had one for any other reason in a long time. Identify possible drug interactions. Although these drugs are safe in combination with most other medications, you want to ensure that you're not going to end up taking two stimulant medications at the same time, or that you're not considering atomoxetine if you're taking an MAOI. If you smoke, discuss this with your doctor if he or she is planning on giving you a stimulant. Nicotine can also act as a stimulant, and the combination of the two can increase heart rate, blood pressure, or other stimulant side effects. Finding exactly the right medicine. You have about a 75% chance of responding to whatever ADHD drug is tried first. Don't be surprised if you feel like you're suddenly able to function pretty normally, maybe for the first time in your life. But if that doesn't happen, don't be discouraged. Lots of other medications, forms, and dosages are available for you to try. How will the doctor decide what to try first? Stimulant or atomoxetine? This question is faced by every physician in every case of adult ADHD. Some start with a drug they've already been using successfully with a lot of their patients. Some start with whatever they were trained to use as a first-choice drug. Some use what their colleagues are already using extensively, especially if they have less experience than their colleagues. Most doctors are likely to try a stimulant first if you don't seem to have another disorder besides ADHD, or it's urgent or a priority to get relatively rapid control over your ADHD. You're about to be fired if your work doesn't improve. Your spouse or partner plans to leave if things don't turn around quickly in your relationship. You're about to fail college classes, etc. The form chosen for a first trial might be determined by the pros and cons listed in Chapter 13. But my colleagues and I believe a doctor can home in on what's best for you by using more than standard guidelines. The following checklist will give you an idea of whether a stimulant or atomoxetine might be best for you. You could also discuss this list with your doctor for consideration. Please answer each question either yes or no. Issue to consider. 1. Have you had an adverse or poor response to stimulants before? 2. Have you never had a prior adverse or poor response to a noradrenergic agent? 3. Is an immediate medication response not necessary for urgent management of your ADHD? 4. Do you have problems with anxiety or depression in addition to ADHD? 5. Do you have a tic disorder or Tourette syndrome? 6. Do you have significant insomnia or problems falling asleep? 7. Do you have significant problems with emotional impulsiveness, anger, or conflicts with others in the early morning? 8. Do you have any concern over using a Schedule II stimulant, possibly due to adverse publicity or abuse potential of the stimulants? 9. Will you encounter conflict or hostility from family members if you take a stimulant? 10. Are your doctors or you concerned about the greater logistic difficulties of using a stimulant, frequent office visits, closer monitoring, and associated increased medical costs? 11. Are you a college student where recreational misuse, theft, or diversion may be a potential problem? 12. Do you have a history of drug abuse? 13. Does anyone living with you, such as an immediate family member, have such a history? 14. Have you suffered significant insomnia from taking a stimulant in the past? 15. Have you experienced significant morning irritability, anger, or other behavioral problems while taking a stimulant? 16. Have you experienced blunting of effect or abnormal restriction of emotional expression, blandness, on a stimulant? Totals. Total count of yes and no. The more yes answers you give, the more I believe you should consider atomoxetine before a stimulant. Your doctor might also consider combining the two, using lower doses of each to give you better, broader coverage of your various concerns. Arriving at the right dosage. The dose it takes to treat ADHD successfully varies widely from person to person. Some adults require very small doses, equal to those used for children, while others need much higher doses, well above the average. Expect your physician to play with the range of doses for you, starting with a low dose and increasing it every week until you have a good response or such annoying side effects that going to an even higher dose is no longer an option. But be patient. Sometimes it can take 2 to 3 weeks, or even 1 to 2 months, to find the best dose for your situation. The chances are quite good that the first medication you try will work for you. You have only a 10 to 25% chance of not responding to the first drug tried. You have only a 3 to 10% chance of not being able to tolerate the drug at all. If the first drug tried does not work for you, or work as well as you and your doctor would like, several other options may well be the right ones for you. Let's say you try an MPH delivery system, such as the time-release pellets Ritalin LA or Focalin XR, without much success. The delivery system, not the particular medication, might be the problem. Switching to the water pump Concerta or skin patch Daytrana might work for you. Failing that, switch to an AMP delivery system, like Adderall XR, or Vyvanse, or to the non-stimulant atomoxetine, Strattera. A physician should go off-label and use a non-FDA-approved drug for your ADHD only if you have shown no positive response to any of them, or you have another condition that needs to be treated first. Monitoring the treatment. Medications designed to treat ADHD target the specific problems in the brain discussed in Step 2. Once you've landed on the right medication for you, you'll notice that you're more productive at work. You're better at sticking to tasks you need to do. Your impulse control has improved. You're more thoughtful about what you're doing. You can better organize your thoughts. It's easier to carry on conversations. Writing business letters or reports is possible. You're following through on promises. Your emotions are under better control. At the start of your medication treatment, your doctor will probably want to see you or at least speak with you weekly to adjust the dosage as needed, until your symptoms are controlled as much as possible. Afterward, you'll have to contact the doctor monthly if you're taking a stimulant, since most states require that you get a new prescription each month. Refills are not allowed. Typically, this prescription must be filled within a few days to a week, and it can't be filled outside the state or the county in which it was written. Atomoxetine is not a controlled drug and can be refilled several times before a new prescription is required. Once you've found a dose that works for you, your doctor will likely need to see you for routine follow-up exams every 3 to 6 months. We found that people often need additional dosage adjustments after the first 3 to 6 months on their medication. Whenever they've had an unusual weight gain or loss, or when their life circumstances have changed dramatically, and so has control of their symptoms. For instance, returning to college full-time could increase your need for time management, self-organization, and self-motivation skills, necessitating an increase in your dose, at least for the days you're in the classroom or studying. Or if you're a computer salesperson, you might find you need only small doses to manage your ADHD on days when you're calling on many customers in a region, but more medication on days when you have stacks of paperwork to do. Or should you get a promotion to district sales manager? Ordinarily, though, without such a marked change in circumstances or weight, once a dose has been established for a few months, it typically can remain stable for many months thereafter. To help you monitor any changes in your symptoms, you might consider using the ADHD symptom tracking scale at the end of this chapter. It can give your doctor more precise information about how medication may be improving your symptoms and whether additional dose increases might be necessary. It can also help you remember to pass on to your doctor far more specific information than you might recall without recording it. When should the medication be discontinued? Doctors typically recommend that adults take their medication 7 days a week, year-round, because the impairments ADHD can produce occur not just at work or in college, but in many other areas of life, such as driving, raising children, home responsibilities, managing money, and social relationships, all of which may benefit from medications for ADHD and might be affected detrimentally if the medication were stopped. So long as you're experiencing impairments in any of these areas, medication should continue. Yet there may also be times when going off the medication might make sense, at least temporarily. In my clinical experience, some adults have found that the medication they were taking greatly restricted their range of emotions, and even creativity. While this is not common and has not been documented in research studies, these individuals were in unique employment situations where their complaints made some sense. One such person was a poet. She took her medication most days because of the responsibility she had running a household, paying bills, driving, and the like, but found that she was far less creative as a poet on the days that she set aside for writing. So she would stop her medication for just those days, and the arrangement worked well for her. Poetry is nothing without its emotion, imagery, and metaphor, and she found her emotion was greatly restricted by her medication. Another was a talented musician who played with a nearby symphony. Like the poet, he found that the medication was very useful for days when he was not playing his cello in the symphony. But when he performed with the orchestra, he was much more connected to and expressive of the emotional tenor of his music. The qualities that had made him such a successful musician, if he went off his medication. Is the effectiveness of medication likely to be influenced by any major changes in the body, like a major weight gain or weight loss, or hormonal changes, perimenopause and menopause? Some people, particularly growing children, do find that their dose must be adjusted with time. This is likely due to weight gain and other changes with maturation. These are less likely to be issues in adults. But some adults have reported changes in the effectiveness of their medication with weight changes. So doses may need to be adjusted from time to time, though less often than in children. We have no evidence about the impact of perimenopause or even monthly menstrual cycles on medication effectiveness. So this is a question that remains unanswered at this time. It's not always about ADHD. Keep in mind that no medication for ADHD will miraculously solve all your problems. Troubles at work, in relationships, and elsewhere are not all caused by ADHD. Naturally, then, medication for ADHD won't erase them just because it's working. Unfortunately, figuring out which ongoing problems in your life need to be addressed by some other route can be tricky. Is your girlfriend always mad at you because you still forget to call her when you've promised to? Or because you two are just incompatible? Were you passed over for promotion because you don't know what to say and not say to your boss? Or because you haven't acquired the skills needed for the next job level? Are you being harassed by a collection agency because you don't pay your bills on time or at all? Or maybe they've just mixed you up with someone else? In many cases, the first problem in each situation may well be a consequence of having ADHD, while the second would not, and would not be expected to change as a result of taking an ADHD medication. Many people with ADHD find that it's easier to sort out the answers to these questions once medication is helping them think more clearly. For some, it takes practice. Living with untreated ADHD for a long time can leave you with a history of mistakes you didn't need to make. Those mistakes can leave other people expecting bad behavior and poor decisions from you. In turn, you can end up resentful and defensive. Even now that you can function better, you might have trouble looking objectively at what's causing your problems. Do other people see what they expect based on your past, rather than the way you are in the present? Has all the criticism you've received over the years left you expecting blame, seeing malicious intent where none exists? ADHD can leave you with a pile of unproductive attitudes and shoot yourself in the foot habits that are hard to shake. That's why many adults with ADHD recruit therapists, counselors, or life coaches to help them start fresh. Giving medication a helping hand. Therapists and life coaches can be of huge assistance to many adults with ADHD, once they have begun a course of effective medication. Please understand, though, that there is no scientific evidence this kind of treatment will suffice on its own. It can, however, help you face the specific